Welcome to Papa Lens Podcast. This is your host, Chris Bucherry, bringing you the legacy of Leonard W. Leeds on a series of audio recordings created back in August of 1987. Today we take you back to 1929 and 1930 and the history of early aviation in this country. Leonard talks about the flight of the Graf Zeppelin, as well as Charles Lindbergh's flights and other historical events in avionics, and he talks about aerophilately, which is something that interested him very much. He also talks about signing a letter and sending it off around the world on the Graf Zeppelin, and then using it later to help finance his college education at NYU. So this is a fascinating little story. I really enjoyed putting it together, mastering it, and piecing together the intro and closing pieces for this, so I hope you enjoy it as well. And I take you now to Papa Len and the history of avionics in the early 20th century.
Well, that was your first day, and you have told me of learning geography and currency, but quite early you must have had some wonderful experiences with stamps. Do you remember anything about that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. I think the first real experience, when I knew the Graf Zeppelin was going to fly around the world, and I was already, by that time, being notified officially, I guess, through the United States government or the stamp, the philatelic press, as we now call it, and so forth. And I knew that the Graf Zeppelin was going to fly around the world. And Sir Hubert Wilkins was going to be on the Graf Zeppelin, writing the story for, it must have been United Press or something like that, International News. And so I was already an aerophilatelist because I was collecting airmail covers, and I knew something about what airmail covers were. These were first flights, and they were the introduction of let's say it this way, that when an airport was dedicated, it meant that an airplane could land in that city. And there were airports that had already been dedicated. So I would have mail carried all around the United States and Canada on these first flights, which eventually evolved in my collection as being, I guess, the history of the creation of the aeronautical industry in the nation. Until then, mail was being carried by railroad trains.
It's certainly a new thought to think that, of course, there were no airports. So when they made an airport, they would send a plane to it and have a celebration.
Well, we called that airport dedications. Mm-hmm. And I became very much involved in the airport dedications because, as I began to learn later, first of all, it was a celebration. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with progress, aeronautical progress. Before that, I guess, just like here in Atlanta, there was a place called Candler Field. Mm-hmm. It was nothing more than like a cow pasture with enough strips there so that a plane could land there. In 1928, I believe it was, or 27, Colonel Charles Lindbergh came to Atlanta, and I have a picture of that, of his plane at Candler Field, and he was given a big celebration here after he had flown to nonstop from New York to Paris in the Spirit of St. Louis, a monoplane, Orion monoplane. But anyhow, you asked the question, what was my first real experience, exciting experience. I went down to the New York City City Hall post office, and I had already made some money caddying, and I think I must have had about $20 when I went to the City Hall station, and I bought 4 sets of the Graf Zeppelin stamps. The first stamp was 55 cents. There were 3 stamps in the set, and 65 cents. The second one was $1.30, and the third one was $2.60. And I bought 4 sets of them. That's all the money I had to spend. The man at the window had a whole sheet of 50 of each. These were sheets of 50, and he said, how many do you want? And I said, 4. So it didn't occur to me to ask for 4 with the plate numbers. I was to regret that much later. And so I paid $4.55 for each set, put 1 set on an envelope, which was canceled in New York City the first day of issue there. And then I put enough stamps on an envelope to be sent around the world on the Graf Zeppelin on the round the world flight. And the other two, I put in my collection. So, in order to finance my schooling at New York University, I sold those 2 sets I had in my collection, and I got about $35 for each set. It was a good profit.
How many years later was this?
Oh, I don't know. That must have been 10 years later. So the first A cover came back canceled, which I sold to the man that I used to caddy for, who was a doctor, and he would buy certain things from me. And I sold it to him. I must have sold it to him for about $20. At that time, the one that went around the world came back to me, properly canceled with a cachet on it, historic. And I found Sir Hubert Wilkins at a New York air show one day, and I brought it. I knew he was going to be there. I used to chase these aeronautical greats. So I approached him, and I said, he was Sir Hubert by that time. He was Sir Hubert Wilkins. I said, Sir Hubert, would you please sign this envelope for me? Because he had been on this airship and had flown around the world and wrote the story. So I gave him, so he took his pen out. And, excuse me, he didn't take his pen out. I took my pen out and gave it to him. That's what's important about the story, however small the story is. And he started to write his name. Now here I am, this must have been in the Grand Central Palace in New York, and it's an air show. I don't have those things anymore. And all the latest airplanes that had been built were on display there, and all the dignitaries were there. And he was surrounded by all kinds of dignitaries. He was a celebrity himself, who was later to make an attempt to go on to be the first to take a submarine under the ice to the North Pole, which never happened. It just failed, I guess. And he started to write his name, and the ink ran out. And he bellowed out, will someone here give me a fountain pen? And there must have been 50 fountain pens that were handed to him. And then he then proceeded to sign the envelope. Well, I walked away walking on air and had it for many years, and until one day it disappeared. Where it disappeared to, I don't know. But as an experience, you know, it was enervating. Then I was in touch. We shook hands, and I was in touch and talked to and pressed the flesh with a world celebrity. And that created a new mold for me.
Was that your first?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yes, I went on to interview, what's his name?
Richard Byrd?
No, it wasn't Richard Byrd, it was Fitzpatrick. Colonel Fitzpatrick, he was the only airman in the Irish Air Force. And he flew across the North Atlantic from Dublin, Ireland, to Newfoundland. And then he came down to New York and he had a big celebration in New York, and I was part of a group that followed all these aeronautical greats. And I discovered that he was staying at the Roosevelt Hotel, and I went there with some blank envelopes and a fountain pen and called him from the telephone in the public lobby, and I told him who I was, that I was a high school student at Richmond Hill High School, and that I was writing for the newspaper, The Domino, and I would like to interview him about his flight. This is what you call chutzpah. You're not supposed to do this. He answered the telephone. He was in his room. He said, come on up. And I went up there, and I guess I should have been shaking in my boots, but I wasn't. I knew exactly what I was going to do. And we sat and talked, and here I am in the presence of this man who had just flown the Atlantic. I believe his was the first west, east to west flight across the Atlantic.
East to west.
East to west. Lindbergh had already flown from west to east, mm-hmm. from New York City, from Roosevelt Field, mm-hmm. to Le Bourget, mm-hmm. in Paris. And I don't know what year this was. This might have been 1931 or something like that. 30, 29, I'm not sure now. And he signed the envelopes for me, which I still have, by the way. And I wrote the story for The Domino, where it was published, which I don't have it anymore. And whenever I go into the collection and I see this envelope, Colonel James Fitzmaurice, IRA, Irish Republican Air Force, the curtains of time drop away, and there I am, in his presence, in at the Hotel Roosevelt in New York City, just a school kid who decided he wanted to do these things, that's all. There are many other experiences that...
Well, you had friends who also collected who were your age, didn't you?
Yes, we had a group. We formed the Aerophilatelic Club of New York, and we were pioneers in what we were doing. We had first flight airmail covers, tracing. We were to realize later, as I said, the history of the growth of commercial aviation in this country. That's what my collection is today. It's still intact. The history of commercial aviation in this country. These are tangible, this is tangible evidence of these flights that were made by many of these guys who flew by the seat of their pants. There were no beacons. Occasionally there were beacons. The United States government put them up. But we're going into the 20s and the 30s, at which time I was immersed in the situation where a gentleman from the Department of Commerce, I believe it was, came and talked to the students at the Guggenheim School of Aviation at New York University in Washington Square, New York City, at which time I was attending NYU at night. And I was writing for The Violet, which was a newspaper for NYU. And I knew that the Guggenheim School was going to have a celebrity there, and I went there with a notebook. And this man was there, and I guess all these people who had an interest in the growth of aviation at that time, and I'm going back to the very early 30s, were there to hear him. He had something to say, and nobody knew what it was going to be. And before he started talking, he wanted to know if there were any reporters there for the major newspapers.
That must have been very enthralling to you.
So I kept my mouth shut. I wasn't a reporter for any newspaper. And what he went on to say was a blockbuster. The government, on February the 19th, 19 so-and-so, whatever it is, I forget the date for the moment, was canceling all the airmail contracts.
Why? 1937?
It was earlier than that. It was could have been 1931.
This was when Roosevelt was in, and he had the Army fly the...
Well, the Army flew the mail. They decided that the Army could fly the mail, and they were canceling all the contracts. It was contract airmail, and they had a new setup that they were going to be moving into. And I got the story. But the Army airmail contracts were going to be canceled, and here I am with Army airmail, contract airmail covers in my own collection. And I knew the date and so forth. And I took the story to the New York Sun. I walked in there, a fresh kid from NYU, and I said, I have this story which I have written. And this was at the Guggenheim School of Aviation. And this was the speaker from the federal government. I think it was the Department of Commerce at that time. And I think you should have it. I think it's important. There are no reporters that were there from any of the newspapers. And the speaker made sure that there were no reporters there for a newspaper. I said, you can have it. And this man said, I'm sorry, but we have our own correspondents at New York University. And if it was worthwhile, we'd have the story now. We can't accept yours. Well, so I walked away abashed, and that was the end of it. And I had mail carried on the first flights from, went out of Newark, New Jersey, first flight. I sent one letter to my sister-in-law, Janet, in Chicago. And I sent one to the postmaster up in Boston. And these envelopes that I use, I still have them in my collection. And these envelopes were the original flights of about 1927 or 1928 that had flown to Chicago and had flown to Boston, and were all postmarked. And so I just turned them over, wrote the name and address on it to be returned to me, and put the current postage for the airmail rate, whatever it was, and I'd forgotten now, and sent them, and they came back to me. Very much marked up with the postage, you know, the killer cancels. So, you speak of adventures. I guess there were many adventures. Our group went mad for these aeronautical greats who would come to New York. I mean, Earhart. Who else was it now? It was Costin Ballant. I went out to Curtis Airport in Valley Stream and watched them land in Valley Stream, New York. Must have been 5,000 people there. They had been tracked all the way across the Pacific, all across the Atlantic to Newfoundland from Gander. Never stopped, kept right on going. The name of their plane was the Question Mark. And it was a sesquiwing little airplane, red airplane, with a half a wing on the bottom and a full wing on the top. And history was made that day. When they flew nonstop from Paris to New York and eclipsed Lindbergh's flight, because it was 10 times tougher to make that flight than it would be flying from west to east, because they all flew with the prevailing winds west to east.
These people were flying from east to west.
East to west. Mm-hmm. They flew from Paris, Le Bourget Airport, to Curtis Field in Valley Stream, New York.
Do you recall how long that took them?
No. But the date was September the 2nd. I have one of the envelopes, because on that day, I took my envelopes over to the Valley Stream Airport, to the Valley Stream Post Office, which was closed. I think it was a Sunday, I'm not quite sure. Well, maybe it was too late in the afternoon. And I threw them through the front door. I think I put a note on it, please cancel this day, you know, so forth. And then they were delivered to me. But I think they were unique, because I don't think anybody in the world did that day, you know, to celebrate Cost and Ballant coming to Curtis Field, flying nonstop from Paris to New York, and as I said, eclipsed what Lindbergh did, because the flight, there were others who made that flight, but when they tried the flight, but they died in the Atlantic. They never made it. They made it, and they went on a tour of the country.
Did you ever see Wally Post?
No. There were lots of people I didn't see, but we would travel out to Mineola and go to Roosevelt Field, and before that, when I was much younger, we would go to what was then called Curtis Field. That was before Roosevelt Field. It was Curtis Field in Mineola, and the other new Curtis Field was then in Valley Stream. But Curtis Field in Mineola was historic. Rennie Funk took off to fly New York to Paris before Lindbergh, and his plane crashed and he died. Charlie Levine and Clarence Chamberlain took off from Curtis Field or Roosevelt Field, and they flew in a Columbia monoplane, a Belanca monoplane called the Columbia. And they flew nonstop from Long Island, New York, to Germany. This was the time when flying the Atlantic was the great adventure. Of course, Amelia Earhart then did that. Richard E. Byrd did that. Louis A. Yancey and Roger Q. Williams did that. Roger Q. Williams lived on the next block from me in Richmond Hill. And Louis A. Yancey was his navigator. So we as a group were very much immersed in all of this. We formed the Air Philatelic Club of New York. And I guess maybe 2 or 3 years later, we all went our other ways, you know. We were growing up and so forth. And even today, I'm still a member of the American Amiel Society. And very much involved with it.
Do you have any contact with any of the young men whom you knew then as stamp collectors?
No. We were aerophilatelists. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall their names?
One was Milton Ehrlich.
Do you suppose you could locate him?
I don't know where they would be. I still have envelopes in my collection with his name on it. There was a gentleman by the name of Gilbert Lesher who introduced me to this whole thing anyway. I'm going far afield. Will you excuse me now while I hope this has been on all this time.
Oh, don't tell me it isn't.
Yes, it has been on. I've been recording. Let me cut this off for a bit and let me come back to
it. Right.
Thank you for joining us, the second edition of Papa Len's podcast. Really glad you listened in today. I had to leave that last little humorous bit in there for your enjoyment. Anyway, I'm glad you came, I'm glad you listened, and we'll catch you again soon.